Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. I'm here today with my guest, James Taylor of James Taylor SEO, and today we are discussing how to focus on the organic growth of your agency using SEO. James is an SEO consultant who runs a small SEO consultancy out of Manchester, UK, and he provides consultancy to businesses, to growing businesses, runs bespoke training sessions, and also operates a white label service via completewhitelabel.com. Thanks so much for joining us today, James.
Thank you for having me.
So let's dive into a couple questions so that we can get to know you a little bit. So how long have you been living in the UK for?
I am Manchester born and bred.
So, okay, so you've lived there your whole life. Awesome. And then, so what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an SEO consultant? Like, what gets you out of bed in the morning?
I honestly think it's, I think over the last 12 to 24 months, I'd say it's a lot based on education and sort of being able to communicate effectively to clients. So what really is motivating me at the moment is definitely that sort of education piece for clients. So not just sort of getting the work in, but actually being able to, you know, offer an integrated sort of SEO service that the client fully understands. Because I suppose in with it being a completely unregulated industry, there is a lot of sort of, you know, snake or salesman out there and that sort of thing. So for me, it's really, really important to be transparent. So not even necessarily in the sort of bespoke training that I do, but I'd say more broadly, what has been motivating me for easily the last, you know, 2 to 3 years as things have started to seriously scale is just spending time actually speaking to clients and not just sort of, you know, here's your SEO strategy, see you later sort of thing, you know, actually being able to communicate and making sure that, you know, they understand and any issues that they have, because it's such a long-term process as well. It's really, really important to know how to communicate why you're doing something and where that might get them in a 6, 12 month, 24 month sort of timeline.
Exactly. Yeah. Managing those expectations is huge because it can be a pretty overwhelming topic to a lot of them.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's the total opposite of something like a paid media campaign where you, you know, you might start in month one and not see results for 6 months, 12 months. So it's really vital that you're able to communicate why, you know, one, why things take so long, and then two, why you need to do a certain approach.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us, how did you get into digital marketing?
So I did a degree of advertising and brand management.
Okay.
As part of the degree, in the third year, I did an internship at an agency, and that was around 2012, and I'd never heard of SEO before. I'd had little blogs and things like that, so I was always sort of into writing. But I didn't know you could actually make money out of doing that. And it wasn't until I saw that, one, you can actually do a blog and make money out of it, and you can also offer it as a service if you get really good at it. And then I wrote a dissertation on local SEO. So basically, as sort of algorithms were progressing around that time, and it, you know, it's still read quite a lot today because it sort of predicted where we're at with local SEO at the minute, based on how things were growing. And as part of the dissertation, I interviewed agency owners, partly because I thought, well, surely one of them is going to offer me a job at the end of my degree. Luckily, one did offer me a job at the end of a degree. So I went to an agency straight from university. I was there for about 4 or 5 years or so. And I was always doing sort of freelance work and things like that on the side. And then it wasn't really, you know, it took quite a few years to sort of get to the point that I'm at in terms of being visible as an SEO consultant, and then also with the white label side of things, that was growing. And it just got to a point where I couldn't work full time and look after that at the same time. So I was lucky, really. I was between both businesses of the consultancy and the white label. I was able to go full time and make SEO my full time job for myself.
That's awesome. So yeah, tell us a little bit more about your business. So how did James Taylor SEO really come to be? Was it just, you know, you were just doing those freelance jobs on the side, and then it just got to a point where you're like, all right, like I can make a full-time living out of this?
Pretty much, yeah. So, you know, despite the really unimaginative name, it was just sort of the way that it grew. So I have, the trading name is Dispense Digital Limited. And I had an agency site as basically just needed a name to trade as, and I made an agency site off it. And I just had a white label, page sitting on it. And it was actually that sort of took off. And it was through the white label work that really allowed me to scale. And the clients just sort of assumed that I was, you know, the SEO working for Dispense Digital. They didn't know it was sort of just me, which was great for me because I could have them as, you know, super legitimate clients and scale quite quickly. And then with the consultancy side, the same thing, really. I mean, it was a really long process, and it wasn't until I started seriously focusing on link building and outreach and sort of broader digital PR for the site. And once I started to do that as part of a wider SEO strategy, that's when the leads really started to come in, because my site got some proper authority. I'd started to rank really well, and luckily still do. And yeah, it was just being patient, really. I think that's, if there's going to be one takeaway from this, it's being patient in the SEO game.
Yeah. And just starting a business, you know, it just takes like a few years to really get established and get your name out there. No, that's cool. That's really interesting. So let's delve into our topic. So we're going to be talking about how to focus on the organic growth of your agency using SEO. So when you were first starting out, what were the first SEO tactics that you focused on for organic growth?
So the main thing that I did, because I didn't have much time or a budget, was largely around content. And you know, the role of content for any website can't be, you know, it just can't be dismissed. You know, how much of a role it has alongside things like link building, we can get into, but you know, content is what Google judges in terms of where to place you as an authority when it comes to your competition. Well, it's one of the many ranking factors, but content is super important. Right. So my first sort of port of call was identifying what that customer was that I wanted. So from an agency sort of perspective, I knew that I wanted to focus more on the white label, because I couldn't offer an agency service myself because it was just me. Whereas white label, generally the projects can be a little bit smaller. They're still really, really good, but they might just be a one-off website audit, or someone might need a little bit of content or something, yeah. Or maybe a couple of months support because staff members are ill. So it really made sense to sort of target that. And then based on that, I just built out service pages and blog posts, sort of, you know, talking all about white label, talking more broadly about SEO consultancy, yeah. And then quickly realized, okay, I'm going to need some backlinks and some authority here, because it's such a competitive sort of space. There was only so much content I could write before, you know, there was such a blocker. I mean, in some industries, you can get away with just doing content because there's not a lot of competition sort of doing, you know, they're on it with all aspects of SEO.
Right.
So if the competition is fairly low, then usually the content, you know, you can do well with content, things like affiliate marketing, where it might be really specific niche. But for something service driven, generally, I'd say, you know, and what I would do if I did it all over again was, rather than focus on just one thing, try to do content and outreach alongside each other, because it obviously takes time to bed in for any new site.
Yeah.
So, I'd say content. And then after about 6 months of going, you know, really spending a load of time on content, both sort of service page and blog posts and that sort of stuff, putting together an outreach strategy. And again, because I didn't have much budget, I was literally just starting off from my bedroom and working full time at an agency. I had to be quite clever and, you know, really consider where I was sort of either investing my money or time in an outreach strategy. Right. So part of that and probably the best performing sort of strategy today for myself and for clients was using sites like Help Reporter Out, Quoted, Cision, Journal Request on Twitter, and basically just working with these platforms and responding to requests from journalists. So then if they, you know, they need 300 words around a certain topic from someone who's a marketing expert, I would respond really quickly. And then because I gave the content, I'd get a backlink for it. It's a bit of a numbers game. but, you know, when you do get links like that, they're really, really powerful. And they're so much more powerful than what most of your competition will be building, unless they're doing that same sort of thing. So it was at that point, you know, probably the 6 to 12 month point, that's when things started to really grow, because I put the time in on the outreach side.
Yeah.
And I had the content in place that once the authority started to kick in a little bit, then the content was there and sort of pushed everything upwards even further then.
Okay, interesting. So are there any other, now that you're more established, are there any other tactics that you're using with regards to your SEO, or is it mostly the backlinks and the content strategy?
Yeah, I think it's, at the minute, it's trying to remain consistent with those two. I mean, there are things like, you know, for any site, you do technical SEO monitoring, but if it's not a massive site, you don't need to be day in, day out on technical SEO things. I would just have a setup on SEMrush and Ahrefs, monitoring tools, and have a manual review each week through Screaming Frog and things like that.
Okay.
I think the biggest thing is sort of consistency at this point, because it does boil down to sort of content outreach and technical SEO.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if it's a small agency site, then the chances are that you sort of technical SEO, once it's sort of in a good place, unless your site's getting hacked or you're introducing tons of content and files and images and, you know, to drastically increase your page speed and all that sort of stuff, it's probably not going to change too much. Those are probably famous last words, because we know how Google is with their algorithm updates. So for example, with the Core Web Vitals update, that completely flipped things on its head.
Yeah.
But other than that, I would say the sort of consistency side now is definitely on the content and outreach. So
yeah,
being able to, well, I basically have someone now, Ellen, who looks after outreach for my consultancy and Complete White Label.
Yep.
So being able to have someone there to, you know, literally just do outreach full time, because it really is a full time thing for your own brand, you know, even clients aside.
It's like,
I'm going to have to treat the business as a client if we're going to sort of get to the next level. And it's been hard to get to that point, really. But I'm really, really glad that, you know, I sort of took the risk with it.
Yeah, no, that's really good to hear that you're doing that, because a lot of agencies, I think their own marketing efforts get put on the back burner, and they only focus on, you know, like working on the working in the business on their client jobs and not really focusing on the business. So yeah, I think that's a really smart move on your part.
Yeah, we're getting there.
It's a process for sure.
Yeah.
Have you made any mistakes when it comes to your personal SEO that was a good learning experience?
I'd say, yeah. So when I was sort of fresh to SEO, I tried to speed the process up by sort of buying backlinks and SEO services from less than reputable providers.
Okay.
Just because I didn't really know any better at the start. And
yeah,
that was sort of the reason behind Complete White Label as well, was sort of offering that service but being completely transparent about it. Because you do see, you know, a lot of the leads that I get is I'm sort of cleaning up after you know, whether it's an agency or a consultant who's literally done just that, where they're taking the sort of monthly service fee each month, and they're just finding someone for the cheapest price who's shooting a load of really dodgy backlinks to the site, and the content is barely readable and it's scraped off another website anyway, and things like manual penalties happen, or, you know, the site just sort of flatlines organically. And that was, you know, when I started off, I didn't know anything about that, so I just thought, oh well, if I just you know, if I have more links than somebody else or more content than someone else, then that should just mean that I'll just get above them on Google. And we know that that's not the case. It's very much quality over quantity.
Right.
So yeah, I'd say that was definitely my biggest mistake, because it could have harmed things. I think it was quite lucky that I didn't do it to the point where you very quickly realise this isn't the right way to go about things.
Right.
But yeah, I'd say that, you know, for anyone listening as well who is starting in that journey, when you don't know much about SEO and you see things like, or even getting cold emails off agencies or consultancies say, I'll get you to number one for your keyword within, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, run a mile. Because, you know, no one can really guarantee that anyway. It's quite disingenuous if someone sort of put a specific timeline on how long it's going to take to get from one point to another for a specific keyword.
Exactly.
And you know, it just doesn't work like that. So I got lucky, really.
Exactly. Yeah. Awesome. And then, so can you tell us, does social media play a role in your organic growth at all?
Yeah. So I've been, over the last couple of months, I've really got involved with Twitter. I've always had it, and I never really sort of understood just how much of a community was on there, sort of specific to SEO.
Interesting. I'm the same. I have Twitter, but I'm just not very active on it.
Yeah, and it's been great. You know, I've had leads, like really, really good leads, come through Twitter, and I don't necessarily have a lot of followers. I think it's just knowing the right hashtags to use to target the SEO community or the marketing community more broadly.
Interesting.
And just having sort of public conversations with people. I've met people on there that, you know, go on and speak every day now on Slack channels, and sort of like friends, really, I suppose.
Very cool.
And it's great. It's great to find people to bounce ideas off as well, you know, other consultants or agency owners. And YouTube as well has been a really good one. Because I suppose it puts a bit of a face to the name.
So you do like videos on YouTube and post them?
Yeah. So what I do mostly is I'll do like a blog post, and then I'll share my screen and I'll sort of go through it on YouTube. So for example, I do one with like how to use Helper Reporter out for link building. And then I'll be like, you know, I'll log into my Helper Reporter out account and be like, these are the links that I got using this approach. Here's how you can do it. And it's like a really easy process for me. So I don't have to sit there like editing every 2 seconds and, you know, different shots and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really transparent for the person watching as well, because it's like, you know, you can literally see my screen. I'm just going through how to do something.
That's cool. So would you bring on other agencies through those videos, or would it be more of like your small business clients?
For that, it has mostly been sort of coaching and SEO sort of teaching leads that have come through that. Over lockdown, I did a little mini series of interviewing agency owners. So that was really good from the white label side. I didn't really get any leads from that, because I suppose at the time, like, all the COVID stuff had literally just started happening. So I suppose the last thing that people were thinking about was, let's get some backlinks. But it was good for, like, you know, well, one, it was a good way to sort of keep in touch with people that I've worked with. And two, like I say, I'm all about the transparency. So I was interviewing like the Simon who used to own the agency that I worked for before leaving full time, sort of getting his advice on scaling agencies.
Yeah.
I spoke to Hester, who is a digital PR consultant. So how to do link building and content from a digital PR perspective. And it was great, because I wasn't really seeing much of that around at the time. So it was just good to sort of, if anything, it was an excuse for a bit of a chat as well. But that was good. And then it's been surprising, really, again, with YouTube, that I don't have a big audience at all. And I don't have, you know, a massive one across socials. I get traffic from the SEO side, but it's quite surprising that, you know, it's not necessarily about the size of the audience. I think it's sort of how targeted that audience is. So like the engagement with such a small audience is still really, really good and really valuable. And so I'm not as worried about, you know, getting to X number of subscribers or followers.
Yeah.
I think it's more just about putting out, you know, content that is genuinely valuable to the right type of people.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really cool. That's interesting. So would you say the majority of your new clients come in organically or through word of mouth?
Yeah, I'd say, so the vast majority of leads are all organic. I don't do any sort of paid media marketing, no Facebook ads, no Google ads or anything like that. So okay. I'm quite fortunate in that a lot of them come through there. And I'd say over the last few months, quite a few come through Twitter as well, which again was really surprising.
Cool. Yeah,
I'd say that's awesome. The ones that sort of convert the best are definitely referrals.
Yeah.
Whereas sort of the organic leads, they'll probably just message 5 or 6 people on page 1 of Google, which, you know, fair enough, I do exactly that.
Yeah.
Whereas the white label tends to convert really, really well because it's an audience who sort of already understands what they need. So rather than saying how much to get to number one on Google, like where do you start with something like that? Whereas yeah. with the white label, they might say, someone's gone on maternity leave. We need at least, 6 months cover before we can get someone in to help. Yeah. Are you or your team free for 10 days a month for 6 yeah. months? And then they know exactly what they need within that. So, and then generally, you sign a non-disclosure agreement and you don't have to talk directly to clients either, which is, can be a plus.
yeah, if they cover all that, that's a pretty good gig for sure. I feel like more agencies should work together and do that, like instead of viewing each other as competitors, really seeing each other as potential partnerships. I think it's really smart. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really logical way to scale, isn't it, I suppose, because they know that you do good work, you know that they do good work. So like, why not be there to sort of support each other?
Yeah.
Because it's, you see them at the conferences, you talk to them online. Like I'm not here to really view anyone as competition necessarily, because there might be competition from the consultancy side, but they're not from the white label side. So
yeah.
The better the agencies do, generally the more work it means on the white label side anyway. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's really cool. So when you're bringing on new clients, how do you manage expectations with them when you're offering SEO services?
So the biggest thing is, like I said at the start, is definitely being transparent from the outset. So if I'm sort of not aligned with, the client's expectations, then we just won't work together. So
yeah.
Generally, like I say, with the white label side, it works much better because they already understand what SEO is and how long it takes and
of
sort
course,
of what's
yeah.
needed for a client.
Yeah.
So it's much easier to get a task, say a set number of days allocated, or if somebody orders content and outreach through Complete White Label, which you can do through the form.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they obviously have to know what that is to be on that site in the first place. So it's a much sort of easier onboarding process because they understand. Whereas
yeah.
with the consultancy side, if someone's looking for an SEO consultant, they might have typed in, cheap freelance SEO beforehand and been ripped off by someone. And then they'll come to someone like me who is, legitimate and naturally is going to cost more than someone selling dodgy backlinks for a dollar.
And they've already got their guard up.
Yeah, exactly. So then
yeah.
when I turn around and give a quote and say, look, I can't give, in all honesty, I can't give, you'll be at number one by this date specifically, but here's a 12-month timeline and here's how I'll tackle it. They might not like that when they get the quote estimate or how much time is required, but you're never going to convert those types of clients anyway, because they're just in it, they just want whatever's the cheapest, but
yeah.
that's not always the case with SEO. With, we don't really have any set packages for clients. Everything is completely bespoke, dependent on
gotcha.
Where the client sort of is at the time of getting in touch, where their competitors are, and what's needed. So, it might be, we have some clients where we literally just do content because they have internal sort of PR and outreach teams. And then there's some where it's, we do everything across the board because they're larger sites and they do need sort of constant monitoring.
Yeah.
So I'd say, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing about even just more broadly getting clients to convert is that sometimes you could spend weeks trying to convert a client, but if they're not sort of willing to, there's got to be that sort of willingness on their side to understand the process a little bit. It's not as black and white as other sort of marketing strategies. There is a lot of it depends as an answer. Because you don't want to be the person to say, oh, we'll definitely do X, Y, Z.
You don't want to overpromise.
Because as much as you can sort of forecast and estimate, you know, ultimately it is out of your hands in terms of, you know, it's unlikely that Google would flick the switch and change everything tomorrow, but there's nothing to say that they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been doing this long enough that we understand sort of what is sort of integral to an SEO strategy. But I think, yeah, it's literally just being transparent about it, of saying, here's everything that's worked for clients in the past. Here's where you are in relation to your competition.
Yeah.
So it might be that they already have a really solid base for authority and we don't really need to do too much to sort of give an initial bump in traffic. It might just be we need to do an audit and do some quick wins and then, you know, just do link building as an ongoing process because they're already writing content and they already have links and things like that.
Yeah.
Or if it's a completely brand new website, that's where it's, you know, really, really important to be, you know, here's where you need to be in, say, 12 to 24 months and here's how we're going to get there. But at the same time, look, you've got no authority, no traffic, no content. You don't have any sort of keywords optimized on the site. The site isn't built for SEO, so it's sort of an education piece at the start as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think it's just so important to build that trust with them right out the gate because, yeah, like we talked about, like it's depending on who they came from previously, they might have their guard up and just really breaking it down for them, being straightforward is, I definitely think, the way to go.
Yeah, yeah. And I think just it's been a tough one, but sort of accepting that you're not going to convert everyone because
you
know, what somebody wants might not align with your business and how you do business. And I've come to realize that a lot, like a lot of the leads I get, I don't convert. I'll just say, you know, that they might send the budget up front and I'll say, this isn't going to work, but here's why it won't work. And here's what you need to know. When you do go to someone else and if they turn around and say, oh, I'll do it for that price, that you literally just throwing money away. But I always make sure that, like, even if I know it's not going to work in terms of working together, I'll say why it is and then what they need to know so they're not going to get burnt a second time, a third time, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, well, we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are five rapid fire questions. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
I would say it is a business book, but Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink.
Okay.
And so he's like an ex-Navy SEAL. And it's all about being able to be holding yourself accountable for your own actions. So whether that's sort of in business or in your personal life. So rather than sort of trying to find excuses about why things aren't working, being as transparent with yourself as you are with your clients and things like that. So, you know, if something isn't scaling effectively, or if I look at my consultancy site and think, why is it not doing as well as I wanted it to be doing? Being honest about, well, am I actually putting the processes in place? Am I passing the blame on to other people when really that sits with me?
Yeah.
And sort of being able to take a step back. And I suppose it applies to whether you're working, whether it's just you or you're working with the team.
Mm-hmm.
That's been really, really helpful to sort of be able to take that step back from everything.
That's cool. Interesting. And what's that called again?
Extreme Ownership.
Extreme Ownership. Okay. I'm going to definitely check that one out. And what does your morning routine look like?
Well, I try to wake up early. It doesn't always happen, especially if I've been working late.
Yes.
Usually I try to wake up early at a reasonable time. And I try to leave the house fairly quickly with my pug. Nobody's told him that he's a pug, so he has tons of energy. So we try to, it's just a really great way to sort of start the morning. Sort of getting out, walking around outside, and he's absolutely flying all over the place. And it's nice because I used to, and I've recently just got a shared office space as well, which has been great to sort of get out the house and go to it.
Okay.
Because I think over lockdown and when everyone was working from home and things, it's quite difficult to separate sort of your work life and your home life because, well, I'll just put the laptop down on the couch, but, you know, I'm still there. Having an office now.
Yeah, I think it's energizing, like, just leaving the space too. Like, even just getting out for a walk, but just having a change of scenery and then coming back to work, it makes such a huge difference.
Yeah, and definitely, like, having the, you know, little shared office space, and I can take Billy, my pug, and my girlfriend is a freelance web designer, so we go together down there. And it's great because it's been much easier to separate that, the work and home, because you take your laptop and then that's it. Once you leave, it's done then, sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Having that separation is definitely good for work-life balance.
100%.
Yeah, definitely. Is there a CEO that you follow or study?
I wouldn't really say anyone like a public figure or anything. I'd say, like with doing those conversations over lockdown with people that I've worked with in the past, I'd say I learn a lot more from just talking to people who are in similar positions as myself. So whether it's sort of other consultants or speaking to people like Simon Walton from Push On, that was the agency that I used to work for. He's offered an incredible amount of insight, and he's always willing to talk, you know, when I have issues around scaling, or do I need to scale, like what do I even do past this point. So it's I'm quite spoiled really in that I have access to people like that. So I try not to get caught in like the whole sort of public CEO thing, because I'd rather just focus on the people I know I can talk to. I don't think Elon Musk is picking up the phone to me anytime soon.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's interesting. And then, so what is your favorite online tool?
At the minute, I would say Hunter.io.
That's
so
a good
Hunter,
one.
Yeah, it's been amazing for outreach.
It's cool,
and it's free to a certain extent as well. So if anyone's stuck looking for how to land sort of journalist emails and publisher emails, use Hunter.io and then do a bit of snooping.
yeah actually, you're the second person to bring that up in like the last week, right? So it's definitely a handy little tool. And then last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
I think the main thing is that nothing's ever sort of going to be perfect to the point of like, right, everything's perfect, so now I need to launch, or everything's perfect and now I need to sort of dive head first. I think it's better to sort of have something, at least like the rough stages of a business, and then just sort of launch it and sort of grow and scale and tweak, because nothing's ever going to be in a perfect position. And I don't mean it in the sense of like, you know, if it's an e-commerce business but your checkout's broke, launch the website. I mean it more as in like, you're never going to know everything enough, or you're never going to have, say, if we're related to sort of SEO, you're never going to have the perfect authority or the perfect number of keywords ranking. Just launch a site and deal with it as things sort of come.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best. That's been one of the best ways to learn, I think, for myself, is so many things that I never even anticipated that I know for next time now. But I wouldn't have known that if I'd have waited around for things to be perfect, I'd still be full time at an agency. I never would have done this in the first place.
Yeah. That's such a good point. I agree. If you wait for things to be perfect, you're just going to, it might not even work, right? You might think it's a great idea, you put all this effort into perfecting it, it doesn't even work. So yeah, you're better off to just be strategic, get out there, do it, see what works, and then tweak it from there.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, James. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.